Thursday, November 5th, 2015. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Poke Runyon. And tonight we present a discussion on the mysterious hypothetical Sephira of Da'at, the 11th sphere of the Tree of Life, which was an actual sphere in the so-called Tree of Life before the fall. Now, this sphere is on the brink of the abyss between the dimension of Bria and the dimension of Zira. And it was originally attributed to Saturn, which is the most distant planet visible to the naked eye in ancient times. Thus, it was theorized as the beginning of the physical universe. Da'at means knowledge, and is related to the descent of the fallen angels, who, as you recall, brought knowledge down with them. This sphere is vitally important to magic and to magical yoga. This will be again Dion Fortune, our own seventh ray, book three, The Red Ray, and Hermetic Yoga, and we'll refer to the Book of Enoch. And so, for the Halloween season, let us journey to Mote's Domain in the Mountain of Darkness at the edge of the abyss. Now, this is a very complex subject, and it would be very good if we had if we did this with a video, so I could stand up in front of a storyboard or something like that, or a chalkboard, and somehow or other give you some visual aids on this. I would suggest that I think those of you who have listened to this show, maybe you have a little Tree of Life diagram in front of you. That's a good idea to have that when we discuss the Tree of Life or the Oscar. But we don't have that, so just try in your mind to imagine the geometric forms I'm going to be talking about and do the best you can, because I'm sitting here with a stack of books about... A stack of books about 18 inches high, and I'm going to refer at one time or another this evening to all of them. And what I'm going to do is to start off with the most basic, so we get an idea of what we're talking about here. And the most basic, to begin with, is the Kabbalah by Gershom Scholem. And that is not... Gershom Scholem is not a winter sport. He was a scholar of the Kabbalah, as some of you may know. And his book, Kabbalah, that's K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H, which is the Hebrew version, as opposed to Hermetic Kabbalah, which is Q-A-B-A-L-A-H. Now, I'm going to read what... But Gershom Scholem was frankly a historian of the Kabbalah more than a Kabbalist himself. He wasn't a Kabbalist. The greatest recently living Kabbalist was Ira Kaplan, at least in the English, writing in the English language. And Ira Kaplan just passed on a few years ago. And we will be reading from his protege, Leonora Leet, and her Secret Doctrine of the Kabbalah, which is a wonderful book. And we'll be reading a little bit from that, discussing some of that. But let's, because Gershom Scholem was the recognized historian of the Kabbalah, let's get back to this again. We'll start with what Gershom Scholem has to say. Sometimes the three Sephirot, Kether, Chokmah, and Binah, in a triangle, but in a straight line, one below the other. On the whole, however, the overall structure is built out of triangles. From the end of the 13th century onward, a complementary Sephirah, called Da'at, knowledge, appears between Chokmah and Binah. A kind of harmonizing of the two that was not considered a separate Sephirah, but rather the external aspect of Kether. This addition arose from the desire to see each group of the three Sephirot as a unit, comprising opposing attributes as a synthesis which finally resolved them. This was not, however, the original motivation of the pattern. In the Sefer HaBahir, and in several early texts of the 13th century, the Sephira Yesod was thought of as the seventh, preceding Netzach and Hod, and only in Gerona was it finally assigned to the ninth place on the model of the Neoplatonic hierarchy, according to which the transition from the one to the many was accomplished through the stages of intellect, universal soul, and nature. Many Kabbalists, Azrael in particular, thought that the Sephirot is also comprising these stages. All right, let's stop a minute to talk about just what is Gershom Scholem saying here. Well, he's saying that Chokmah and Bina in Yetzirah, as you were, in Bria, this is the archetypal world, right below Kether. Kether is absolute, and that's the world of creation up there, and the dimension of creation. And then below that is the dimension of Bria, which only contains two spheres. It contains Chokmah, wisdom, and Bina, understanding. And one is Chokmah, wisdom is gray, and Bina is usually pictured as black. This is in the Menuhin Mundum scale. But now, these two form a sort of a yin-yang. You think of them as a yin-yang, or in a way, I like to use the analogy, they're the two-stroke engine of the Tree of Life. You know, a two-stroke engine, if you think of the yin yang diagram, it's the circle, you know, with the sort of the white teardrop and the black dot in the middle going one way, and the black teardrop and the little white dot in the middle going the other way, chasing each other around like a dog chasing his tail. And it's kind of, this is the two stroke engine of the universe, okay? And it's in its own dimension, but in order to make these triads and these triangles, they theorized, at least in the Bahir, and then Moshe de Leon picked it up for the Zohar, theorized that the two of them would come together. Now, when they come together, if you slide these two spheres over to where they overlap, what it does is it forms a vesica Pisces. If you can take, you know, you take two circles and move them together, you'll see that they form a vesica Pisces, a sort of an ellipse with a point on the bottom and the top. The OTO uses it for their dove design, and we use it to form the OTA rhombus in the middle of the vesica Pisces. That rhombus is like a diamond shape, you know, the OTA insignia, which you've all seen. So we use that as a formation of OTA, which, of course, is Omega Tau Alpha. And that has its own significance, as you can imagine. So this is one of the reasons for their doing it. Now, another reason is, for doing it this way, is it becomes a transition point. Da'at is a necessary transition point, because we don't have, using the Athanasius Kircher version of the tree, which was one of the Lurianic versions of the tree that Athanasius Kircher decided to use, and we ended up using it, the Golden Dawn ended up using it as their basic design. The Menuhin Mundum, where the Ten Sphere Tree comes from. But originally, this the older tree, or the tree before the fall, was an 11-sphere tree. And quite frankly, Da'at's position is very, very important. And Leonor Elite is the best one to describe that, because those of you who have our Cypher manuscript book, in the back we have an article on the 11 sphere tree, the Golden Dawn's 11 sphere tree from the Cypher manuscript. And their 11 sphere tree was another one of Isaac Luria's many designs. But it's completely different as far as its correspondences are concerned from the 10 sphere tree that we use. And it doesn't need to be, but it is. And you know, with all the paths, different numbered, the paths all attributed to different letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And this is not necessary, really. So what we opted to do, so that we wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel when we got into the inner order, what we did was we reconstituted Da'at in its position, and that's right up directly between Tipureth and Kether on the little pillar. And that's, of course, on the path of the priestess going up. And so then we could add more paths. We could add a path, well, literally leading from Hesed to Da'ath, and then on up to Bina, and from Gomorrah on up to Da'ath. And so give you, and then of course, when having done that, we had to create some new tarot cards, which we did, and this makes the tree much much easier to work, because you don't have to go and redo all the work you've already done down below. For the new configuration, something the Golden Dawn didn't get around to. They would have, I believe, the Golden Dawn, had they continued, they would have developed an 11 sphere tree, probably not the one that they had in the Cypher manuscript. They would have developed something like this. This seems to be almost, almost something obvious. But Da'at was referred to as a hypothetical sphere. Now, this is kind of strange, because all the spheres on the Tree of Life are hypothetical. The whole tree is hypothetical. So this is the Da'at was referred to as a hypothetical sphere because they wanted to have this entrance. Actually, what it was the gateway through the abyss. And they moved the two spheres together, as Gershom Scholem described, and as I that's talked about. They moved Chokmah and Bina together so they could form this opening point for this window into the abyss, stargate, if you will, if you want to call it that. And the catch here is, and this is what we need to make me very, very clear on, is that Da'at then needs, if you're going to reconstitute it as we have, so we have a gateway into, a real gateway into Bria and Kether on above, we can continue our ascent. In order to do this, to actuate it, it needs to have a planetary correspondence. Well, now, that is turned out to be a rather simple thing, but it is simple after the fact. Now, the Kabbalah, the way it's constructed, the Ad-Kaim has a number of discrepancies and design flaws. One of them we've pointed out before is that there should have been, had they had a 24-letter alphabet, which they should have had, and Gershom Scholem even admitted they should have had, then they would have been able to fill out all the astrological correspondences and the elemental correspondences, which they didn't have with the 22-letter tree. So consequently, they ended up taking air, which should have been down at the bottom. Air should have been, at the very least, it should have been probably the path of the sun leading from Yesod to Hod. That would have been a good place to put the air element, but they didn't do that. Instead of that, they moved it all the way up the top of the tree. And this is really rough, because you should, as you begin your work, down at the bottom, as you begin your work down at the bottom of the tree with the elements, you should be able, you should be able to have four paths corresponding to each one of the primal elements. And yet, unfortunately, because of the 22-letter the 22 letters that were available to the tree, we only have three elements. You know, we have Sheen, path of Sheen leading to from Malkuth to Hod, which is fire, and then we have the path of the moon leading up to and that's 31 leading up to Netzach, and that can be attributed to water, although it's not really water, but we can be attributed to it. And then, in, right in the center, and this is important too, right in the center, the 32nd path is attributed to Saturn, leading straight up to Yesod. Now, this is very important because Saturn is, as I said earlier, is the beginning of the physical universe, according to ancient, very ancient tradition and the Kabbalah. The beginning of the physical universe is Saturn. And so the path leading from Malkuth to Yesod was attributed to Saturn, Earth. And Saturn became analogous with the element of Earth. Now, this is the key to the fall of Da'at. Because Da'at, when the tree after the fall, Da'at falls down to Malkuth, and knowledge descends down to it descends out of that place that it was, leaving a hole up there, which is represented usually by a dotted circle line. But if we reconstitute Da'at where it was, right smack equally distant between Kether on top and Tippereth, et cetera. If we reconstitute Da'ath, then Da'ath should be attributed to Saturn. Now, first thing you're going to say when you hear that is, oh my gosh, we can't do that. What happens in the numbering system? Prater IDOME, who is unfortunately no longer with us, but he came up with a brilliant solution to that problem. He said, "Oh, it's that simple. Just Kether becomes zero, not one, and Chokmah becomes one, as it should, and then Bina becomes two, and then three is Da'at, that's Saturn, and then we're home free." So Da'at becomes, Saturn becomes the gateway, not just the first manifestation, it becomes the gateway, as it should, and furthest planet out. Now, this is the way, actually, as it turned out, this was brilliant, because Ira Kaplan said that Kether was beyond numbering, Kether should not be one. It should be zero, because it's beyond there. You can't number the beginning of the universe. And so Chokmah is the beginning of the so-called male or creative principle is Chokmah. And Bina is the female principle in the realm of the fixed stars, and that's what it should be. It shouldn't be Saturn. It should be the realm of the fixed stars. And so we put when we reconstitute the tree, we move Saturn to Da'at, and then everything from there on out falls into place. Now, based upon that, let me read what we have on Da'at out of our Hermetic Yoga book. Da'at, third sphere, Saturn, beginning of the physical universe, center of the cube of space, corpus callosum. Da'at is the third sphere in the downward lightning flash sequence of our 11-sphere restored tree before the fall. This arrangement is explained in Appendix 1, and that's the article from the seventh ray. Saturn was the furthest planet the ancients could detect. Hermetic celestial geometry considered its orbit to be just below the zodiacal circle and the heavenly realm above. And hence it was said to be the beginning of the physical universe in spiritual evolution, and conversely, the way back to heaven in the ascent. Now, this has all been discussed in the text, and Saturn is traditionally a malefic, and because it revolves so slowly, it was given an alchemical attribution to lead. And yet, in our Hermetic and Dante-esque progression, it is the highest sphere, the jumping-off place for returning to the Godhead. And our icon uses both mythical and elemental symbolism. Here we see the interior of the Mountain of Darkness from the Book of Enoch and the Zohar. We see the fallen angels who have developed into a state of earthly imprisonment. They yearn to be free and follow the ego upward. Meditation on this icon will reveal one of the great mysteries of our tradition, that we ourselves are the fallen angels, and that we must overcome our addiction to the pleasures of the flesh in order to liberate our spirits. In the Zohar, it was written that King Solomon mounted Shumal, a mother of eagles. And for that, see my story, Prince Akkad, in our seasonal book. And to visit the Mountain of Darkness and learn the magical secrets from Azza and Azazel. However, path workings to Da'ath should be treated like the Tibetans treat Poa. Once a year is enough. It's like Halloween. Once a year is enough. Now, let me talk a little bit about Azza and Azazel. Now, Azazel has several different varieties. One of them is the scapegoat, but that's not what we're concerned about. Azza and Azazel were a sort of a creation of Moses de Leon, who authored the Zohar. Now, I know there are still people who believe that that Moses de Leon translated the Zohar out of Aramaic from an old manuscript that dated back to 200 A.D. But that's been pretty much disproved, and both his wife and his daughter both confessed that Daddy made it all up. But regardless of whether Daddy made it all up or not, the Zohar is a holy book, and the greatest Kabbalist of all time, Isaac Luria, he considered it a holy book, and so we'll accept regardless of whether it was came out of yeah rather regardless of whether Moses de Leon channeled it or copied it or whatever. What he did was this. He took all of the fallen angels from the Book of Enoch, and that's about 200 of them, led by our old friend Samyaza with the three eyes, as you remember. He took them all, and he used Azza to represent all of the female versions of these fallen angels, and then Azazel to represent the male version, and then he chained them, one on one side of the cavern, one on the other side of the cavern, as you can see in our icon. And that's in the icon. We have a nice colored icon in our Hermetic Yoga book. And those of you who have not ordered your Hermetic Yoga book yet, you really should, because I'm not going to talk about what a bargain it is, because you're getting it for cost, and you should order it if you're associate members, and most of you, and well, I'm going to say most of you are, but hopefully most of you will be. Anyway, these two angels are still lusting for each other, because the reason why they fell was they wanted to enjoy the pleasures of the flesh. And you know, you can't blame them. I mean, angels are spiritual beings, and we're down here in Malkuth having a lot of fun, and they just, you know, they thought, well, we ought to go down there and have some fun too, you know, and so they all came down. But what Moses de Leon did was he took all 200 of them, and all the female versions of them became Azza, and all the male versions he represented as Azazel, chained them to either side of the wall, and then because they did come down to give knowledge to human beings, as you recall from the Book of Enoch, they taught everything from astrology to they taught women how to make themselves up and they taught men how to forge swords and they taught men and women how to draw horoscopes and everything else, you know, that all of the stuff that we weren't supposed to do, I suppose. But these two figures, Azza and Azazel, represented the 200. And Solomon would mount up on his great eagle, that's the old ancient Canaanite Shumal, the mother of eagles, and he would fly to the mountain of darkness. This is according to Moses de Leon now, the Zohar. And he'd fly to the mountain of darkness, and he would learn his wisdom from Azza and Azazel chained to the mountain. And what better source than that? Because they add the wisdom, and of course, we assume that was the wisdom to help Solomon build the temple and become a great king. But let me give you another little thought on this. Our Arab colleagues. They came up with, they did the same thing. I don't know whether they were influenced by the Zohar or not, but they did the same thing basically on their side of the pond. They took all the fallen angels and divided them into two, in here again, into a male and female version, and they called them Marut and Harut. And so they did essentially the same thing. They probably were influenced by the Zohar. But so these fallen angels are still, they're still there, and they're still in that dark mountain, at least in our collective unconscious. And I mentioned I mentioned Leonora Leet and her secret doctrine of the Kabbalah. I want to, of course, we didn't. Do this and publish this, but I really want to encourage you, those of you who really want to get into this, the secret doctrine of the Kabbalah, that's K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H, Recovering the Key to Hebraic Sacred Science by Leonora Leet. This is really a beautiful book, and this is one of these books that you just feel like you're really, really getting the secrets behind this ancient system, and I have just found this book to be a treasure house. Now, I'm going to read you what she has to say about Da'at in here, and we're going to discuss this a little bit in relation to. I'm juggling all these books around here. Like I said, I'm going to be reading the Zohar in a moment. All right, let's see. The basis of this evidence, the Tree of Life diagram, should now be recognized as emanating from the central point of Da'at. Remember that now. The central point of Da'at, the non-Sephira, and not from Kether, the first emanated Sephira. The most important implication of recognizing that the Tree of Life diagram emanates from Da'at emerges, however, from reflection upon the meaning of Da'at knowledge. For what the sixth-fold tree centering on Da'at accomplishes is precisely the transformation of the Tree of Life into the Tree of Knowledge. In a Kabbalistic tradition recorded by Eleazar of Worms in the Sefer Hashem, the Book of the Name, the Tree of Knowledge was held to be not intrinsically, now this is important, the Tree of Knowledge was held to be not intrinsically evil. Rather, the error of Adam and Eve consisted in eating of its fruit prematurely, on the sixth day instead of the seventh. Had they waited and eaten of the fruit with Sabbath consciousness, it would have been a tree of life for them. The central Sabbath column would then have harmonized the duality of good and evil that the right and left columns of the tree can represent, and without which it becomes a destructive tree of knowledge. Now, that's a bit of rationalization, I know, but they're trying to, you know, there's a love-hate relationship with the fallen angels all through the Kabbalah. You know, they're supposed to be, oh, they're supposed to be evil, but the truth is that the knowledge they brought down was basically what formed the Kabbalah, and so this is a Kabbalistic rationalization. It was as though a dualistic pursuit of knowledge that Adam and Eve may be said to have lost paradise. So it is through the proper understanding of knowledge, da'at, that the descendants of Adam and Eve were shown the way out of the bondage of this destructive dualism. And a couple of other things about what she just said here. She says that da'at is the center of emanation. Now, what she means by that is what we have already, I don't know whether we beat her to it or not, but in our Cypher manuscript book, you will find, back in the back of the book, you'll find an appendix where we have a Pythagorean Tetrakis. And this is by Fred Adams, by the way, my master. And he, what Fred did was he divided this Tetrakis into, he just proceeded to draw lines from the triangle points out to the, you know, perpendicular to the sides. And he continued to do this. He continued to fractalize the whole Tetrakis with these lines from points to point and side to side, to where he ended up with a matrix in the Tetrakis. And this matrix, a matrix in which any valid configuration of the Tree of Life will fit into. Now, Leonora Leet did the same thing with a cube. And you all, I think you're all familiar with the cubist space diagram. We used that in our own version of the Kabbalistic head, you know, the Parsumian, or whatever, I can't pronounce that. The doctrine of the, you know, the head of Adam Kadmon. We used the cube of space with Saturn right smack in the center. And if you've seen our diagram of the head, the head of Adam Kadmon in our yoga book, or in our yoga lessons, and that explosion came over the internet, and I don't know what it was, but if you heard it, it was not the Big Bang, but it sure sounded like it. And anyway, so we have sound effects. Yeah, that diagram is free. You can find it on the internet, actually, our head diagram. But what Leonora Lee did was she took the cube, and she also took another design that Fred Adams had worked on, not that she got it from him, she probably derived it herself, the dodecahedron of Plato, which is, the dodecahedron is a solid that represents the whole universe. And she diagrammed that. And she found out that when she put her 11 sphere tree on there, she could take all the central lines and emanate them right from the Da'at point, and that became the origin from her. That became the origin of the tree, and This is, you know, really sort of confirms the whole idea of the both the idea of Saturn and also the idea that you know that that Da'ath is that center point. Now, also too, I did a diagram of a couple of universal hexagrams. And if you take these universal hexagrams and you run one from Kether and one from Da'ath and link them together, you see that they will touch about all of the major spheres on the tree. So we have a great deal of geometric symbolism involved in Da'ath. And Da'ath is, you know, as I say, it is the entrance to the abyss and to the higher spheres. And we'll go on through and discuss the Briotic spheres next week, and more into this. Well, the best way to describe it is Neoplatonic emanation theory that got Kabbalized, and you know, Plato. As we recall, Plato came up with the idea of preforms. Before forms existed, there had to be ideas of forms, and those ideas eventually became forms. And his follower, Plotinus, put them in motion and developed the theory of emanations, which in turn influenced the early Kabbalists. And so you see. The early Kabbalists, and this is not anything. I'm not being anti-Jewish when I say this, but the early Kabbalah was very, very heavily influenced by Pythagoras. In other words, very heavily influenced by the Hermetic tradition, and which is Pythagoras, and it was very heavily influenced by Pythagoras, but then it went its own way, and it didn't get reintegrated back into the Hermetic tradition, which gave it birth, until it got all the way up to the Rosicrucian period. That's when they started reintegrating it. And we owe a lot to the Hermetic philosophers. And of course, Pythagoras was, I think, the first, you could call him, I don't know, Empedocles, if you please, and even if you don't please, I suppose Empedocles has to be considered, because he's the one that came up with the four elements. And, you know, Empedocles said, everything is air, earth, fire, and water. And he didn't add that I know of the consciousness, but he assumed it. But everything is air, earth, fire, and water. And that probably, you could say that's the beginning of Hermetic theory. You could say that. But Pythagoras was certainly a follower of Empedocles in many ways. Anyway, so what I would like to do is I'd like to now pick up our old friend Dion Fortune and let's take a look at in her discussion of Hesed, which we've already covered on this show, but she said, and the abyss, the gulf fixed between macroprosopus and microprosopus, marks a demarcation in the nature of being, in the type of existence prevailing upon the two levels. It is in the abyss that Da'ath, the invisible Sephira, has its station, and it might aptly be named the Sephira of Becoming. It is also called understanding, which might be further interpreted as perception, apprehension, consciousness. In a way, that just about says it all, doesn't it? And what I would like to do now, I would like to have a sip of coffee. That was good. Now, have a sip of coffee, and I would like to read from the seventh ray, the red ray. I would like to read our article on the 11th, New Tarot Trumps for an 11th Sphere Tree of Life. Okay? And by the way, this article that I'm going to read you is, we reprinted this article in the Hermetic Yoga book, so you can get either you can get the third ray, and you know, if you get the third ray, you get our special advanced book review on Nazi Bimbos and the Sword of Siegfried, and that is worth the price of admission. I'll tell you, that's really funny. Yeah, Nazi Bimbos and the Sword of Siegfried, reviewed by Marius Dork, with what a kind of a sexy illustration. And let me see here, get to the article on and spheres, the 11th sphere tree. Here we go, and we have also the color pictures of the new tarot cards. That's Conquest, Alchemy, and Unity, and the new paths, the top of the Minuta Mundum. So there's a lot of other good stuff in the Red Ray too. You know that there's Return of the Dragon Lords, which I remember Friar Heracles did a delightful impression of me reading this at one time. Okay, New Tarot Trumps for an 11th Sphere Tree of Life. And the blurb says, during the past 30 years, we have witnessed an explosion of tarot card designs. We have been offered tarots from Aztec to Zen, always with the 22 major trunk format dictated by the traditional design of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. But with the arrival of the new millennium, the hypothetical sphere of Da'at is finally manifested, and we need new tarot trumps for an 11th sphere tree of life. Okay. In the Golden Dawn's original cipher manuscript, the tree of life shown was not the 1652 Athanasius Kircher design we are familiar with, but a strange 11-sphere pattern connected by 22 paths with no horizontals bridging the spheres. Nearly all of the tarot and Hebrew letter-to-path attributions differed from the standard GD scheme. The origin of this unusual version of the Ottkeim can be traced to Knorr von Rosenroth's Kabbalah Denudata, 1677, and attributed to the school of Isaac Luria, who was called the Ari. The Golden Dawn's founders did not base their outer order initiatory tarot attributions on this Lurianic scheme from grades 1 through 10 through 4 equals 7. They stayed with the 10-sphere Kircher arrangement. The 11-sphere tree was conjectured to represent the tree of life before the fall. For more details on the background of this curious configuration, see Appendix 2 in the Cipher Manuscript, and the Secret Path System, and in my book, The Secrets of the Golden Dawn Cipher Manuscript. Now, since I first began to contemplate the Kabbalah some 30 years ago, and this was written 10 years ago, I have enjoyed a fascination with the hypothetical sphere of Da'at, knowledge. If you saw it as the gateway to the Olam Yetzirah, astral world of formation, then Da'at is the portal of the abyss, beyond which lies the Olam Bria, the archetypal world. Eventually, this abyss must be crossed. So why is Da'at considered hypothetical? For that matter, the whole tree is hypothetical, so Da'at is either there or it is not there. I suspect Da'at's hypotheticality results from a timid adherence to the rejoinder in the venerable Sefer Yetzirah that says, 10 are the numbers out of nothing, not 9, not 11. And of course, we must not forget that most of us are born with 10 fingers and 10 toes, none of which are hypothetical. And for this reason, and because 11 fell one short of 12, the number of perfection, 12 disciples, 12 months, 12 signs of the zodiac, and 12 days of Christmas. The number 11 was cursed with a bad reputation. Isaac Luria was not affected by this superstition. Crowley was intrigued by it. I find it, the dynamic instability of 11 to have fascinating possibilities. Da'at is the stargate, the wormhole, the time warp, the dimensional rift, the cliff at the edge of the world, the jumping off place. We would hardly want to internalize an entirely different tree of life, and in order to access this elusive sphere. With this in mind, and with the happy coincidence of having an OTA magical alphabet of 24 letters, I set out to create an 11-sphere tree of life, with its paths and tarot keys that would extend and modify the Kircher tree rather than replace it entirely. In this respect, all first-order path workings could remain intact. There was a minor conceptual problem in that the new design actually required 25 rather than 24 paths, which meant that we needed a null for one letter number attribution path 34. This turned out to be a fortunate opportunity to include infinity, equal to the square root of minus 1, as a super final beyond omega, and omega equals 800, the path 33. And in an endless loop, it would precede the first character in our Neo-Canaanite magical alphabet, Crotter equals 0, that's path 35. I could have opted for 5 new paths, leaving the Kircher arrangement virtually intact, but this seemed inelegant and unnecessary. The lovers, soulmates united, the emperor, universal kingship achieved, and the fool, innocence recovered, are all appropriate as post-abyss realizations. In the Kircher arrangement, they cross the abyss at tangent angles in any case, and by placing the priestess between Bina and Kether, and the magician between Hokma and Kether, with the fool coming straight up the middle pillar, we have created such a harmonious supernal family that I find it difficult to understand why something like this wasn't not suggested years ago. I was relieved to discover that the 11-sphere sequence would not affect our traditional number-to-sphere attributions along the flaming sword or lightning flash if we use the logical expedient of attributing 0 to Kether. As mechanically simple as this appears, the philosophical implications it produces are nonetheless profound. Hokma and Bina, the Western yin-yang, are now 1 and 2, which seems more appropriate. This Silverado arrangement leads more importance to the divine feminine principle than previous Kabbalistic progressions. However, if we need traditional justification, we can cite Ira Kaplan's definitive Sephiroth Zerah commentary, in which he states that the ancient rabbis believed God himself could not be numbered because he was beyond the limits of mathematics. And so we are in harmony with the venerable Kabbalists when we assign our numberless number to Kepler. Moving the planetary attribution of Saturn to Bina and down to Da'at was the inspiration of Frater Idomme. And after the fact, it seems perfectly obvious. Saturn, to the ancients, was the last of the planets before the realm of the fixed stars, which now becomes Bina. It should have been in the first place. Saturn was considered the planet of death and resurrection, the obvious residence of Moth, the Canaanite Dark Lord, and the right location for the abyss, replicating the position of the veil beyond Ashia and Yazura in Yasod. Conversely, Bina, which was always the realm of the Supernal Mother, is more properly attributed to the great celestial goddess of the zodiac, Asherat of the sea, the Soma Sophia, or Nuit in Egyptian and Ptolemaic pantheons. With the rationale and mechanics of our new structure set forth, we have reached the point in our discussion where the symbolism of the three new trunks can be explained. First in our new order is path 33, conquest. I'm trying to read Roman numerals, you know, and it's XXX, XXX, I, conquest, leading from Gabura to Da'at, and attributed to Omega, which equals 800. The last letter in our 24-character Hermetic magical alphabet. The central figure is the Canaanite war goddess Anat. She stands in triumph upon the bodies of her fallen foes, the unbalanced demonic aspects of the four elements, capricious air, dissolute water, wrathful fire, and slothful earth. Behind her stands a ruined temple symbolizing her victory over the bondage of earthly religious dogma. The burning fortress connotes her mastery over the opposing earthly socio-political restrictions. Her necklace of human heads represents previous incarnations remembered, and the girdle of human hands signifies the deeds of those lifetimes accepted and reconciled. And the skull cup is an offering of her own mortality to the higher principle. The bloody hook sword is the means of severance with which she cuts all bonds to the ego-centered physical universe. Her rings carry the victorious goddess from Mars to Saturn on the path of the spiritual warrior. This tarot key is attributed to the element of Earth, a vital hermetic correspondence missing in all previous tarot arrangements. And that's because it was missing in the original Kircher version of the Kabbalah. Now, second in our sequence, 34, alchemy, leading from Hesed to Da'at and attributed to infinity, which equals the square root of minus one, a null between the end and the beginning of our magical alphabet. The central figure is the Canaanite blacksmith god Kothor Incasus, the biblical Tubal Cain. He forms a middle pillar between Jachin and Boaz, the traditional columns at the entrance of Solomon's temple. Overhead spans an arch depicting the vault of the heaven of the heavens as signs of the zodiac, with a mystical keystone representing as infinity. Beyond Kothor is the alchemist's furnace, the Athanor, with its pelican terminating in a crucible into which the essence of the distillation is precipitated. And in the foreground is the quenching vat marked with the elemental symbols of the four primal alchemical operations: mercury solution, sulfur calcination, salt separation, spirit conjunction. This tarot trump itself is attributed to sulfur as a symbol representing the entire alchemical process. Kothor, that's also Kusur, wears a Masonic blue lodge apron to signify his role as a spiritual artificer. His jewel girdle is the mystic belt of Orion, whose stars can be seen above the distillation coil. And I have a reference to Montauk Chia's fusion of the five elements. His lament is the Caduceus of Hermes, which represents the mystery of the chakras and the nadis. The sapphire jewel of Hesed, the third eye, is mounted in the headband he wears on his brow. He holds the philosopher's stone, the perfection of the great work, which is nothing less than a synthesis of his purified chakras, the eternal chariot of his immortal soul. The third and penultimate of our keys is path 35, unity, rising from Tipperath to Da'at. To this trump, we assign the letter Krater, that's 10 equals 0, which connotes the Holy Grail. The jade-green female figure sitting in a meditative asana is the goddess Astarte. Her body contains 9 of the vital chakras from Malkuth up to Hokmah, with Kether shining as a brilliance, emanating from the center of the universe, just above her aperture of Brahman. These chakras are attributed to the spheres of the Kabbalistic tree of life, following the course of the flaming sword or lightning flash. Bina and Hokmah are located in the right and left hemispheres of the brain, and we depict both of them graphically as one yin-yang design on the left side of Astarte's head. Da'at is located in the portion of the brain called the corpus callosum, and is shown on the right side of Astarte's head. Hesed is in the third eye of the forehead. Geburah resides in the throat. Tiberith in the chest. Netzach in the solar plexus. Haut just below the navel. Yesod in the genitalia. And Malkuth in the anus. This Western Psychic Center arrangement was first revealed in 1975 and published in the seventh ray, volume 4, number 2. Revised version in chapter 9 of the Hermetic Caduceus. From the Book of Solomon's Magic, 1996. And more recently, of course, in Hermetic Yoga, Volume 1. Astarte sits in a vast ocean of living water, germinating spermatozoa coming from the stars, swim up into her womb in an endless cycle of regeneration. Behind her head looms the great Hermetic mandala of the universe, the Heliosphere, which conveys the inner meaning of the Hermetic Rose Cross, befitting her path position in the middle pillar above Tiberath. Astarte, like her sister, the Tibetan goddess Green Tara, internalizes the complete mystic path of spiritual attainment. This trump is appropriately attributed to the element of spirit. As Frater Solomon has reminded me, this new arrangement will impact our HGA magical retreat procedure. We decided not to let it, actually. We decided that because people have been working the basic tree, we were going to let them do that. So even though Mike reminded me that we ought to deal with that, we just decided that we were just not going to reinvent the wheel at that point. The anchorite would now be required to access the new paths. Now the second order path worker is using Kustor's boat. And I said, on this symbolism shall be forthcoming. Now, as I say, we decided that we were not going to do this, not going to inflict this on people before the retreat, because that would be putting the cart before the horse. Now, the bibliography on this was Montauk Chia's Fusion of the Five Elements, which is Taoist, Crowley's The Book of Thoth, 777 and other Kabbalistic writings, Ira Kaplan's Sefer Yetzirah, The Book of Creation, my own Book of Solomon's Magic, and Secrets of the Golden Dawn Cipher Manuscript. And this, of course, was written before the Hermetic Yoga book, but we published it as an appendix because it does relate to so much of it that we were dealing with in the Hermetic Yoga book. And then we have diagram of the tree with the new trumps, and then we have colored pictures of all of them. So, as I said, this is all in the seventh ray, book 2, the red ray, which is available on Amazon. And as I say, it's got a lot of other articles in it that are interesting besides this one. So I encourage you to get that along with the yoga book. I'm going to finish off my coffee here. And now, we're just about out of time, and that ought to be enough to get you thinking about Da'at. So next week we've been to Da'at. Next week we're going to cross the abyss. We're going to deal with the higher spheres. That is, unless something else intervenes, that's quite interesting that would supply. But I think we're continuing and wrap up the whole discussion of the spheres of the Tree of Life. And so, until that time, take care, be well, and good magic.